Next case for argument, United States versus Johnson. Mr. Smith.
You may fire when ready, Ridley.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Doug Smith, and I represent the appellant, Femi Johnson. Mr. Johnson was convicted of conspiracy and two counts of possession, based largely on the testimony of a single witness, Kenny Muhammad. He received approximately a six-year sentence, despite the fact that he had no prior drug-related offenses. Mr. Johnson's conviction and sentence should be reversed for several reasons outlined in the briefs. Since the government has essentially conceded that at least a limited remand is warranted under Palladino with respect to his sentence, I'd like to focus on two issues that warrant reversal of his conviction. First, Mr. Johnson's conviction should be reversed because the prosecution repeatedly vouched for the credibility.
I don't understand this vouching business. All he said was he thought Muhammad was telling the truth. Well, that's what you expect a lawyer to say. Right.
Your Honor, that wasn't the only statement that's in the record.
I thought he said the evidence showed that Muhammad was telling the truth.
No, that's not the only statement in the record, Your Honors. I mean, most egregious vouching came with respect to the safety valve reduction that Mr. Muhammad received. And there are two reasons that it was particularly egregious. One was he invoked the authority of the court regarding Mr. Muhammad's veracity.
This is no longer in the trial. This is part of the sentencing you're talking about?
No, this was during the trial.
Safety valve is a trial issue? I don't understand.
It came up during the trial. What happened was Mr. Muhammad was being examined, and the prosecution mentioned the fact that Mr. Muhammad had received a safety valve reduction by the same judge.
Right.
And he mentioned that there was a hearing held outside of the presence of the jury, and that at that hearing, the court had heard evidence that it found, concluded that Mr. Johnson was truthful. I mean, Mr. Muhammad was truthful, and that Mr. Muhammad was truthful as a matter of law. And all this information about proceedings that occurred outside the presence of the jury, where the prosecution is...
Well, that's not vouching. That's the prosecutor making representations about what a judge said. What? I thought vouching was when the prosecutor said, you know, I know, I wouldn't have brought this case if I didn't know that this witness was telling the truth.
Vouching can also include suggesting there's evidence presented outside the presence of the jury that lends to the witness's credibility, and the court held that in the Mealy case. Other circuits have held that it's particularly egregious vouching when a prosecutor invokes the authority of the court. He's not just saying...
But it's true, isn't it? Was it not true?
It was true that there was a safety valve hearing. Right. I don't know that it's a fair characterization, though.
Was that after cross-examination or an allegation that he was making up the story?
No.
For purposes of saving himself from further prosecution?
There was elicited in cross-examination the fact that he received a safety valve instruction. But as this court held in
But that came before the egregious conduct of the
prosecution. That's correct. That's correct, Your Honor. But as this court held in Morgan and the Supreme Court's held in Young, that can't give the prosecution an excuse to make improper remarks.
I understand.
In this case, it's not necessarily a fair characterization that the prosecutor's remarks were even accurate, because the prosecution elicited the fact or told to the jury that the finding by the jury, by the court, regarding the safety valve reduction meant that as a matter of law, Mr. Muhammad was truthful. Those were just findings by the court. And to imply to the jury that there's been some legal ruling, some ruling as a matter of law that Mr. Muhammad was truthful, that's particularly prejudicial vouching. A jury that hears that...
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, you wouldn't get the safety valve if the judge didn't believe him, right?
That's true.
Right. So isn't that just what Isn't that what he was saying? The person got a safety valve because the judge believed he was telling the truth.
That's not exactly what his statement was.
I understand. Not exactly. Pretty close, though.
In any event, there's no dispute.
There's something worse to complain about than that? Esoteric bit of...
Well, there actually were a whole series of incidents
well,
where the prosecution...
Well, you said that was the worst, so I guess the other...
That was the worst, and the prosecution has not cited a single case where that kind of statement has been upheld.
It's a question of upholding it. It's very minor. You don't reverse convictions because of that.
Was this on direct examination?
This was on the redirect of Mr. Muhammad that statement was made.
Was there some challenge to his being given a real good deal in exchange for his testimony, and therefore you couldn't believe him?
There was a challenge, but as I mentioned, the fact that there was a mention of that does not warrant the prosecutor.
Why doesn't it?
This court held in Morgan.
Well, don't give cases. Yeah. What's the logic of it? If the defense is hammering away at this person, say he's a liar because he's just doing this to get off, you know, get a lighter sentence, why isn't it perfectly appropriate for the prosecutor to say, well, he may be a liar, but on the other hand, the judge gave him this safety valve discount, which means the judge at least believed him. Now, why isn't that very sensible rebuttal to what the defense is trying to do?
Because there's much less that the prosecutor could have done. It's highly prejudicial.
I don't understand you. Why isn't it the natural reaction? You call the witness a liar, and so the prosecutor says, well, the judge thought he was telling the truth. So why isn't that sort of logical give and take? Why is that considered improper?
Because it invokes the authority of the court, Your Honor. And that has always been recognized as being highly prejudicial, and it's improper to put the court's imprimatur.
It seems really trivial. Really, it's not trivial. It's wrong. Because it's a fact that the judge believed him. That's a fact.
That's true, but
you say that the witness is a liar. The judge believed him, right? That's relevant. The jury ought to hear that. Then they can make their judgment as to, you know, whether the incentive to lie outweighed the judge's belief that this person was telling the truth.
Well, Your Honor, there's another issue with respect.
That's fortunate for you.
We don't know, based on the record before us, what exactly the judge's finding was based on, what testimony there was at the safety valve hearing. There's nothing in the record that indicates that the judge found Mr. Muhammad to be truthful with respect to the specific allegations in his direct examination testimony in this case. And it's not only that statement, Your Honor. There is a whole series of statements, from the opening statement given by the prosecution, through examination of the witnesses, through the closing arguments. It's not only the qualitative nature of these particular statements, but also the quantitative nature. They occurred throughout the proceedings. In the closing argument, for example...
As Judge Bauer said, what the prosecutor was saying was that this person was telling the truth, and this was shown by the evidence.
That was just one of the statements. Another of the statements had the prosecution saying that the immunity order that the court issued forced Mr. Muhammad to tell the truth in court. There's nothing in the immunity order issued by the district court that says that, so that was an inaccurate...
No, but of course, if you lie under oath, you know, after you've been forced to testify, you're at risk.
That's fair, but that's not what the prosecution said. The prosecution said that the order directed Mr. Muhammad to come to the court and tell the truth, and that's not what the order said. The prosecution also, in closing argument...
Well, wait a second. Huh? I mean, implicitly, if you order someone to testify, you're telling him, testify truthfully, right? You're not saying, please come to the court to testify. You can lie if you want. You can tell the truth. Just so you testify. That's all I care about.
It suggests that the court is...
That's a pretty absurd reading of the order, isn't it?
No, Your Honor, I don't think it is.
That's a sensible interpretation of the order.
Because this statement suggests that the court is taking measures to ensure that when Mr. Muhammad showed up in the courtroom that he was going to be testifying.
What did Judge Cadelli say? You raised this issue, I assume, before Judge Cadelli immediately.
Your Honor, there were no objections to the specific statements. There was an objection to the introduction of the immunity order at the beginning of the trial,
yeah,
and
but
Judge Cadelli...
But there was no objection during the trial.
It was raised
as a post-trial motion, I assume.
Nope. It was no objection during the...
So it's plain error is what you're looking
it's
for.
It's a plain error standard, but most of the cases addressing this issue, actually...
You've got a minute left for your rebuttal, and you want to save that for one last bite.
Yes, thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Fuentes?
May it please the court. My name is Gabe Fuentes. I'm here on behalf of the United States. And I want to tell the court that there was no improper comment or improper conduct during the government's opening statement, closing argument, or examination of the witnesses. I think the court has correctly focused on whether or not the statements at issue in this case were statements of whether Mohammed was telling the truth based on all the other evidence in the case. And that is what the prosecution said.
Did the prosecution say the judge found him to be truthful? You must too?
No. The government absolutely did not say that.
What
happened to the judge was that in the opening statement, defense counsel said that the jury was going to hear about how the federal sentencing guidelines work and about the deal that Kenny Mohammed, the witness, got. Then there were five pages of transcript of the cross-examination of Kenny Mohammed in which defense counsel questioned him about his understanding of safety valve, what it was, how he had to give a proffer to the government in order to get it, and then the government on redirect elicited that, in fact, there were five different criteria that had to be satisfied, that those criteria had their source in federal law, and that Judge Kennelly was the person who made the finding. So there was no argument that the safety valve finding as to Mohammed warranted a conclusion by the jury that the jury should believe Mohammed as to the substantive elements of the case. The jury was entitled to hear the whole story about what happened.
That is, if whoever was sentencing wasn't satisfied he was telling the truth, there was no safety valve.
I'm sorry, Judge.
That if the sentencing judge didn't find that he was telling the truth, there would be no occasion for the use of the safety valve.
I think that's a correct statement, Judge, obviously. The safety valve, the whole issue of whether or not this witness received the safety valve, that was brought into the trial by the defendant in an attempt to say that he had a deal, thus an incentive to lie. And the government wanted to elicit and did elicit that this was not a deal with the government. This was a finding that the court had to make.
Well, it was a deal by the government that the court supported.
I don't think I would quite agree with that. The government agreed as a part of Mr. Mohammed's sentencing that he had satisfied the criteria, but it was a finding for the court to make.
But the original plea agreement, there was a plea agreement with Mohammed, I assume, including his cooperation.
There was. The plea agreement did not include an agreement by Mr. Mohammed to cooperate, and that was brought out at the trial as well.
What did the government agree to in the plea?
The government agreed to acceptance of responsibility, and Judge, my recollection, and I'd have to look again at the Mohammed plea agreement, my recollection, though, is that the government did agree that he was eligible for the safety valve, but there was no agreement that he would provide testimony, no agreement for a downward departure.
What's a safety valve say?
The safety valve provides that if the defendant has no criminal or less than two criminal history points, if he truthfully and completely provides all the information he has about the offense to the government prior to sentencing, and there's three other criteria which I don't know are especially
but
relevant.
But none of them requires that he cooperate with the government in further prosecution.
That's correct. And this was a case in which Mr. Mohammed, the witness, pleaded guilty without a cooperation agreement with the government, got safety valve, didn't cooperate, but was subpoenaed to testify at the trial, invoked his Fifth Amendment, and thus was subjected to an immunity order issued by Judge Kennelly.
Okay.
In addition, Judge, the comments that that counsel has referred to about whether Mohammed was telling the truth, I want to emphasize that those comments were in the context of his telling the truth based on the other evidence in the case. The evidence did depend heavily on Kenny Mohammed's testimony, but it was not uncorroborated testimony. Most notably, the defendant, Femi Johnson, was stopped after a high-speed chase on the south side of Chicago after the February 16, 2000 heroin transaction. He was in the vehicle in which approximately $5,900 was found in the glove box. The money had serial numbers on it, and the serial numbers matched the undercover buy money that the agents had provided to Henry Adebayo to engage in that heroin transaction. So that was significant corroboration, Judge, in addition to the fact that on the January 28th deal, about 2 weeks earlier, the same vehicle was observed at the scene of that heroin transaction, was also followed, also engaged in counter-surveillance-type maneuvers, but in that instance, that person wasn't stopped or did not get out of the car. So this was a case in which there was substantial evidence of the defendant's guilt. Judge Cannelli correctly found that the evidence supported the conviction of Femi Johnson. And Judge Cannelli also correctly found that the government did not procure the unavailability of Angela Abandi, who was one of the putative witnesses in this case for the defense. And the judge correctly did not issue a buyer-seller instruction sua sponte, where the evidence was that Mohammed and Femi Johnson had a shared stake in the transaction that they were, transactions, plural, that they were entering into with Mohammed's buyer, Henry Adebayo.
As I understand it, you're saying that Mohammed had no incentive to testify. He was, did I understand you correctly, say he was subpoenaed, took the Fifth, and then got immunity and then testified?
That is what the record shows.
And everything that took place with the safety valve did not include an agreement to testify.
That's correct, Judge. Your Honor, that essentially concludes my presentation, unless there are any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Fuentes.
Thank you.
Mr. Smith, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
Yep.
Just briefly, Your Honors. First, the prosecution's remarks were not all based on the evidence. The stuff about the safety valve proceedings had nothing
to do with it. I intend to go over carefully the testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to the safety valve, one clarification. The government can oppose the safety valve reduction, so they did.
Yeah.
He did.
They can oppose it. I know that.
Some benefit.
Yeah.
And then as far as the evidence goes, there was no evidence other than Mr. Muhammad's testimony regarding the first drug transaction. The money seized was never produced from the second drug transaction that Mr. Fuentes mentioned. And as we argued in our briefs, the evidence of conspiracy is insufficient because...
Are you saying there was no evidence about the money found in the car?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying they didn't produce... In the first drug transaction, the only evidence...
but you said about the
second transaction.
Oh, the second drug transaction, they never produced the actual money. They had photocopies of it.
Would that have been significant?
Well, it was significant because what they did with it is...
Money looks different, or...?
No, they gave it to somebody who claimed it as her own, who said that it wasn't...
But in the meantime, they took copies of it.
That's right. There was an issue about whether those were the actual... it was disputed whether that was actually the money that was in the car, and Mr. Johnson's fingerprints weren't on the money at all, and it wasn't his car.
Dispute was resolved against your client.
That is true.
As a matter of fact.
That's true, but there was insufficient evidence to support the conspiracy conviction in the first
I understand
first
your theory. You were appointed, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
You did a good job.
Yes, well, we thank you for accepting the appointment.
Yeah, thank you.
Your vigorous efforts on behalf of your client.